This is the Shaolin Chi Mantis Traditional Buddhist Kung Fu Podcast. There are three things we seek to clarify in our podcast: the truth of Kung Fu, the truth of Tai Chi Chuan, the truth of Zen Buddhism. I'm your host, Richard Del Conner, Buddha Zhen Shenlong, founder of Shaolin Chi Mantis, and this is the Shaolin Chi Mantis Traditional Buddhist Kung Fu Podcast. Today's history lesson takes place in China a long time ago. Now, before I begin this story, I have another variation of this story, or pre-story for this story. It's in a book I wrote called The History of Zen from A to Z. And I recommend you get it just so you can talk about it if your friends read it. Anyway, let's get to this story, which may here's the legend and here's the story that I prefer to tell. Bodhidharma makes his way to the emperor. So, whether it's because he's the 28th patriarch of Buddhism, or maybe he's actually kind of a wealthy kid, whatever his credentials were, he pulled it off, supposedly, and he went and met the emperor. Now, I've talked to, or not read, a bunch of different things back in the 90s, and the Chinese people, I talked to them, and they talked about how at Beijing University, they had not substantiated, at that time, Bodhidharma, although there were some theses written on Bodhidharma at Beijing University, but point being is that Bodhidharma arrived at the temple around 600 A.D., We could agree on some date, or we'll just leave it approximately within 100 years. And before he actually settled into the Shaolin Temple, he had evidently seen the Shaolin Temple, crossed over the Yellow River, and then went to the capital, which was a lot north from where it is now. It was the northern Peking capital, or whatever it was back then, and much closer to the Shaolin Temple. So the Shaolin Temple was kind of between the capital and the Mongols. So the temple saw themselves as kind of a vanguard, although they were never supposed to be part of the military or drafted or really part of the police force. They're monks. They shouldn't have been hired, which is an upcoming episode where I'll talk about the corruption of the Shaolin Temple in another period of its history. But at this point, let's get back to the very beginning, 600 A.D. Now, there's already been a monk who's come over from India, and actually that's the story I tell in the History of Zen from A to Z. It's about the predecessor who comes over and builds the temple in kind of awaiting the arrival of Bodhidharma. This other Indian monk, somebody who actually came from India, just like Bodhidharma does, foretold that in 100 years someone would come to renovate Buddhism. He was going to be some sort of Protestant for Buddhism in China. And so it was foretold. And he was able to whip up enough money and support to build a little temple there. And then he passed away. And Bodhidharma ended up appearing about 100 years later. So it kind of came true. So let's see. So Bodhidharma passed through the temple. He saw it. He liked it. And he goes to meet the emperor of China. Now here's the story as it's told, or the way I tell the story. Okay, so Bodhidharma goes to meet the emperor. Now, the emperor says, "Hey, look at this. You're a high-ranking Buddhist monk, so you can give me a high-ranking, high five." I'm getting a little flippant here. But anyway, the point being is that the emperor was actually looking for a pat on the back. He was looking for some sort of credit for his good deeds, like all of us. And he especially wanted to know that all this money and people and sacrifices and resources he'd put into building temples and supporting Buddhism had basically earned him a better place in heaven. And Bodhidharma said flat out, "No, I'm not going to tell you that's true." Well, that's not what the emperor wanted to hear, even if it's not true. So he wasn't very good at being political. Which sometimes, I guess, means kissing ass. And so in this case, he did not say what the emperor wanted to say. And the emperor hit him in a couple different directions, as I've heard the story, talking about his good deeds, the temple he's built, and the monks he's, housed. And although Bodhidharma was appreciative, he basically said, "Those aren't going to change what happens to you in the afterlife." Now, I think that when I heard the story for years, it's only in the last few years I've been revisiting and restudying philosophy and Buddhism and Taoism, that I've come to look at this story slightly differently. And it's how you interpret the words that are said. And remember, in translation, things get lost. And the way it was even done by the expressions used may have meant something slightly different than the literal translation we might give them. So, the point being is that Bodhidharma may not have been willing to guarantee them there was a heaven at all. So he was politely saying, not just about the rewards or the benefits or anything like that. I think, you know, in another way, he might not have been able to give him those guarantees because he could not, as a Zen Buddhist, sell heaven. He was the first, he was a new Protestant. He was a, Buddhism started with the original Buddha, Siddhartha Gautama, and he was very ungodless. And so he took the gods out. But over the next 1,000 years, people started putting the gods back in because they got to compete with all the religions that got gods. You know, oh, you got a cool god. No, I don't got that god. Yeah, oh, man. You know, so you feel like you're lacking. If you're one of the godless religions, you feel like, well, you're just like not having a backup team, you know, or anyway, resources. So they kept adding and adding and adding more gods. And it's really funny to see what, well, not funny, pardon that expression, but it's, well, almost funny, I'm sorry to say, to see what the Japanese have done to make Buddhism so Christian-like, it's almost shocking. The Japanese Buddhism is very, very, very far from the original Buddhism. And they even say so. I had one of my students, I send out my spies, and I had him go in there, and he went in there, and for some months, he actually made friends and had a good time, brought me back to literature and talked to me about their practices and what they do, and had some insight from how, you know, he talked to people, and kind of like me, I got him to probe people, how it had helped them and benefited them, their Buddhism. And it was amazing, because one of the things about Zen Buddhism, we don't allow chanting. But he was able to find out that chanting evidently is a core ingredient that's helped a lot of these people, Japanese Buddhists. The chanting has been of some benefit to them in terms of being able to calm and pacify their mind. But you see, that's the part about Buddhism that Bodhidharma didn't need, because we've got our kung fu and meditation, so we don't need to chant. So we've got something much better than chanting. So I guess that's, anyway, there are other ways than what we do to get to a good result. We're just, as I would think, the better way. At least for anybody who can travel this path and handle it. Anyway, so back to our history lesson. Okay, so Bodhidharma is meeting the emperor, and he's not kissing his butt, and the emperor is not digging it. And I don't know if he's making him look bad, you know, maybe people are laughing at him, maybe his court's, you know, kind of giggling, maybe he's got some opponents in the court who are taking advantage of this to make him look bad or feel bad, you know, for overspending. Maybe they didn't want to spend money on temples. See, it was a waste of money. You know, so this may have been a lot of factors involved in how this came down and how it was interpreted in a negative way. So anyway, that's the whatever the truth is, the gist of it, or the basic story is, I believe, that Bodhidharma met the emperor. The emperor wanted some sort of congratulations. Bodhidharma didn't give it to him. And as a result, Bodhidharma decided, I don't want to hang out in the capital. Whether he left willingly because it was good advice or good judgment, or I don't know, he might have been kicked out. I didn't get the impression he was kicked out, but I did get the impression that leaving was the only alternative. So anyway, so he goes back to the Shaolin Temple. And now on his way back to the Shaolin Temple, and this is kind of where I'm going to leave you for today's story, I think. What did I outline here? Let's see. He had to cross the Yellow River again. And this is the legend of Bodhidharma. And this is where he becomes a mythical hero. I actually have one of these statues hand-carved out of teak wood. It's probably very, very valuable. I just got it because of what it is. It's Bodhidharma. And he's sailing across the North River. And he had to build some sort of a raft to get back across. Don't seem to make much of a big deal of him crossing it the first time to get to the emperor, but the way back, maybe the times had changed or some storms had happened, and it was a bigger deal to get across. And so he had to make a raft. So when you see statues of Bodhidharma, one of the ways you can tell it's Bodhidharma is he'll be either on like a raft, might look like some bamboos lashed together, or he will be sailing on a leaf. I think I've actually seen him on a big leaf, as if there could even be a leaf that size. And he's like surfing on it. So any of those, if you ever see a surfing monk, that's Bodhidharma. He was the original surfing monk. Let me see, was there anything else I was going to say about that? Well, I guess I did have a couple of notes. And basically, he was just kind of trying to... One of the things in Buddhism, or especially in Zen Buddhism, is that we don't have superstition, which means that we don't blame God for anything. We can't blame God for when things go good, and we can't blame him for when they go bad. So, in terms of this emperor expecting God to give him credit, you have to kind of like take a different approach and figure that God doesn't care. What? Okay. Next one. Heaven is not impressed with donations. Well, that's a tough one. You know, why do you donate to a church? Well, it's because the church that's the business of the church is to scare you into thinking they have some power that they don't, and that they can actually improve your heavenly spot, you see. So that emperor would have liked Catholics. Catholics could have played that emperor big time. Okay, and the last thing was the emperor didn't like him like this hippie. Yeah, sometimes people don't want the truth. They really want to believe their little fairy tales, and they want the eye for an eye and the balance and everything to work out on the very simplest level. Got to remember, the eye for the eye and everything balancing is the lowest level of philosophy. That's probably one of the first levels of exiting animalhood, is being able to start to equate percentages of rightness. But that's the lowest level of rightness thinking. Okay, so where were we? Bodhidharma meets the emperor. That was your history lesson for today.
Bodhidharma is the founder of Shaolin Chi Mantis, and he's a kung fu musician. His first album, Tai Chi Magic 1, is the first of a series of albums to contain his meditation flute and raucous kung fu music. Each album is a yin-yang to relax your mind and kick your ass. Oh my goodness. The Shaolin Chi Mantis Online School at www.shaolininteractive.com is a state-of-the-art online school providing a regulated learning system with daily testing, video approvals, and belt rank certification per the program enrolled in at shaolininteractive.com. Bodhidharma began Chinese Kung Fu training in 1980 under Sifu Douglas Wong in Panorama City. This was the White Lotus System. Period. Little did Richard realize that the White Lotus System was considered an enemy of Shaolin. Period. But the school was actually called Sil Lum Kung Fu, which actually is another dialect in China of Shaolin. So although it was a Shaolin Kung Fu school, it was not the Northern Shaolin Kung Fu that Richard was actually searching for that was taught at the Northern Shaolin Kung Fu temple, period. The online school consists of three different Chinese Kung Fu systems. So it's Shaolin Chi Mantis. The Shaolin, although it does include a little bit of the Southern Shaolin, mostly in terms of the first, in the beginning, the training, the body development training. Otherwise, it's all Northern Shaolin. The Shaolin training, the Shaolin weapons, the Shaolin forms are all Northern Shaolin. Now, the Chi is, the word is actually not the same word as the Chi from Tai Chi Xuan, but it does actually symbolize the Chi of Tai Chi Xuan, but it's the word Qigong. Because I was really, really big on the Qigong in the late 80s and early 90s when I started this. I was doing the Tai Chi Chuan every single day. And of course, some of the other Kung Fu and the Praying Mantis and the Weapon or something. But the Tai Chi, I was still had a major focus on. I was really enjoying playing with it and the Qigong. And when I formed the school, I realized that I wasn't forming it so much for the Tai Chi Chuan tradition. I was forming it as a way of my version of the Tai Chi being Qigong Tai Chi. Now, what's ironic is as I started to teach it and developed a program, I ended up with one of the most violent Tai Chi programs I've ever seen. They call us Combat Tai Chi or Shaolin Tai Chi Chuan. Getting back to this, we are three different systems. So we are the Shaolin Kung Fu, the Qi, that is the Qigong, but it means Tai Chi Chuan. And then the third one, the Mantis, is Northern Praying Mantis, which was from the Shandong Temple, a Shaolin temple closer to the ocean in the Shandong province. And this Shandong Temple is where the Praying Mantis was created. So the Northern Praying Mantis. So those are the three. Now the Tai Chi Chuan is actually Taoist. That comes from the Wutang Temple, actually, where they created Xing Yi Bagua and Tai Chi Chuan. And the village below it, the Chen village, is where they kind of took the Tai Chi Chuan, turned it into Silk Reel Boxing, and it ended up being later, of course, then resynthesized into, I believe, Chen Tai Chi. And then it became an offshoot of it was Yang Tai Chi Chuan, which is what I learned. And then I went back to learn some of the Chen Tai Chi and found that very interesting. And then I learned the first brother Yang family. Now, the Yang family, the Yang Tai Chi that I learned from Healy Cho or the Marshal Ho, the bodyguard of Cesar Chavez, that Tai Chi Chuan has a little bit of the Wu style, I'm told, but that Yang style comes from the third brother of the family, or the first brother of the family. Maybe it's the first brother of the family, the oldest brother, and the one with the big pot belly. It looks like somebody who didn't do Kung Fu. That is the Tai Chi master. But the third brother, I should have this better. It was about 5 years ago I did this. The third brother, which is the marshal, he's the kick-ass one. He was more like the Chen style, and plus he didn't get overweight, and he was more enthusiastic, I think, about the Tai Chi than the fellow who was forced to teach it. The Yang style that we know was by somebody who did not want to teach it. He was a very reluctant teacher. He was forced to teach. So that's why the Tai Chi training is pretty much inadequate everywhere. It's pretty crappy because there wasn't a really good Tai Chi Chuan program ever created for teaching to everybody else. It was just hasn't been done. Well, it's being done now. They're like me. I have created a really good Tai Chi program. And I've also interwoven it with my Shaolin Kung Fu and my Praying Mantis to make it an incredibly awesome, amazing program. But anyway, so there you go. So for our history of Shaolin Chi Mantis, at least now you know that we're three different Kung Fu systems, which I teach. You start off, in fact, I always teach the Tai Chi Chuan right off the bat because it makes it easier to learn the Shaolin Kung Fu. And then you have to learn the Shaolin Kung Fu before you learn the Praying Mantis because it was invented by a monk. And he already knew Shaolin Kung Fu, and he only taught it to people who already knew Shaolin Kung Fu. So Praying Mantis is not a beginner Kung Fu. And it doesn't have any kind of system to develop you as an artist because it's presuming you already are a complete martial artist with a complete workout. So the Praying Mantis, that unfortunately most Praying Mantis schools that I've ever seen, they seem kind of a little bit inadequate in terms of providing a wholesome all-round program. They just focused on the advanced Praying Mantis instead of the Shaolin Kung Fu, which is supposed to be underneath it. So you should still be doing the Shaolin Kung Fu when you're doing Praying Mantis, see, to be a balanced person. If you just did Praying Mantis, you wouldn't have all the benefits of the Shaolin Kung Fu and the Praying Mantis. It was expecting you to be a Shaolin artist and doing sword and spear and other things too. Okay, so where were we? That's your history of Shaolin Chi Mantis. Shaolin Chi Mantis is three Kung Fu systems. Now, try to explain that to somebody so we make sure that you actually understand what we're saying. What are the three systems of Shaolin Chi Mantis? For today's web page at ShaolinChiMantis.com, let's start off with the home page. So on the home page, there's a whole bunch of stuff, and this was built many, many years ago, 1999, although the version we're looking at was probably about 2012. The page was built for widescreen monitors. The goal was to kind of try to fill it up as best you can. Now people are looking at it mostly on their phones. So a menu bar on the left and a menu bar on the right is just too much for the phone. So there's going to be some changing in the website. So appreciate it mostly on your laptop, or on your computer for now, until we actually do renovate it perhaps. Okay, now, when we look at this page, there's a few things to take note of. We could see the student motto. The student motto of Shaolin Chi Mantis is truth, wisdom, and courage. All right, three noble-sounding words. But what do they really mean? Truth. Well, truth is a very important word in Shaolin Chi Mantis because it's actually my family name. My family name, Jen, means truth. That's one of the best translations for it. It can mean something true or very good or different things, but truth is one of the variations of the translation. So, or ways the word can be used, Jen. So, as the founder, I am actually a large part of this school. So the school's mottos are very much inherent on my values. Just, that's more coincidental, to be honest with you, but I think it's cute. It's noteworthy. The idea of truth, though, is, of course, to try to get to the most universal view of everything. Because remember, there's a different truth for every object, depending on the direction you're looking at it. So got to put as many truths together to find the best truth. All right, the other thing is wisdom. What is wisdom? Well, it takes knowledge and experience to create wisdom. So our goal is to give people or enable them or provide or encourage that type of experience and information intake that can be cooked into wisdom. All right, and then thirdly is courage. And courage doesn't mean we want them going out and challenging everyone. It's not to be concerned with bravery, which once again, pardon me, should not be concerned with being too risky or foolhardy or careless or dangerous. The idea of being courageous is to have moral convictions. I don't think you can call anything courageous unless it really somehow involves some sort of moral strength. So there needs to be some sort of adversity. There needs to be a good reason to do something in an immoral way, and then you do it in a moral way, and then you have courage. Okay, so let's see. So truth, wisdom, and courage. Obviously, we're trying to just make good people and be good people. The second part on the homepage is also has the Shaolin Chi Mantis slogan. I like slogans. Well, I don't like slogans, actually. That's the irony of this. But they're useful, especially this one. This is a very useful slogan. And it is, the ultimate self-defense is self-awareness. And this means so many things on so many levels. What is self-defense, for a start? Too many people are going to be too limited by just thinking there's physical means. But self-defense can be avoiding trouble. Like self-defense from an illness isn't fighting it with cold medicine. It's actually keeping it from ever getting a stronghold, never letting it invade you. That means, you know, so to really defend yourself, you want to prevent it from ever being able to get inside your body and establish a headquarters and build some barracks and set up a family operation, and then you have to fight to evict them. You know, that's not what self-defense is. Self-defense is keeping them out if you don't want them in. So the ultimate self-defense is self-awareness. So if you're more aware of that disease earlier or the possibility of it or how to deal with it quicker, if you have more awareness, you will be healthier in dealing with it in a better way. All right, so self-awareness exists on different ways, on different levels, but you can apply it to everything. So the ultimate self-defense is self-awareness. Those are two of our slogans. And it also mentions some interesting things, too, about protecting and serving the community. Now, I've got three different schools. In Buddha Kung Fu, we also kind of strive for that a little bit. Probably a lot. In Shaolin Chi Mantis, I'm much more militant about it because we're much more militant of an operation.
having all the weaponry and everything. So, but anyway, and then Buddha Kung Fu, but a little less. And we don't have the praying mantis and a little less weaponry and a little less Shaolin. So it's actually, I call it doable for Americans. It's a very, very hard program, but I'd like to think that Americans can actually do it. That's Buddha Kung Fu. And then Tai Chi Youth is the beginner level of Shaolin Chi Mantis, the first year plus 4 months, really, four semesters of 4 months, stretched out over 3 years. And that's the entire Tai Chi Youth program, which is a heck of a lot of Kung Fu. It's more than most people ever want or need. So, okay, where were we? Back to that home page. It also mentions about the initiate belt test. And the initiate belt test does exist, and it could be perhaps taken earlier, so that they wouldn't have to go through an entire year of Shaolin Kung Fu and then realize that they couldn't continue in the school. But nowadays, it seems like that is the more practical approach. Although I'd allow anybody to test earlier, that now I will allow anyone to students to join in and take all the beginner level program, and then only then would they have to take an initiate test and become Shaolin Chi Mantis disciples members to be able to continue into the intermediate level. So you can actually, everybody can get through the entire beginner level program, which, like I say, is more than what most people want. It's a black belt. It would be the same as getting a black belt in karate. So it's a really nice program, the beginner level. It's an amazing program. So, in fact, it's a lot more than a black belt in karate. There's a lot more kicks and punches and forms and things you got to do in this than you would ever have to do in karate. Okay, so it's a great, great black belt program, but it's our beginner level program of Shaolin Chi Mantis. And that's all it is. It's just the beginners. You got to get through this so you can then get into the weaponry. Okay, so there's a change there that's not reflected perhaps in that page. But the new change is basically that you don't have to take the initiate test until after the whole year. And I can give you a warning. It's not meant to kick anybody out. I mean, I'd like more people to join. But one of the requirements to be able to become a disciple of Shaolin Chi Mantis in the initiate test is you have to be able to broad jump your height. So if you are 6 foot tall, you would draw a line, and then you would draw another line 6 foot away. You'd toe up to the first line, and you would have to broad jump to the other line. Actually, you have to broad jump past it, so we're actually going past while your toes are going farther. So you're actually broad jumping a little farther than your height. I just realized that. But that's the way we've always done it. So you got to basically get your heels to that second line to be able to continue or... Now continue into the intermediate level of Shaolin Chi Mantis. What else was I going to say? Down at the bottom of the page, there's a bunch of links for new students. And I would recommend you go there and then you can click on those and you can start bouncing around. If you can find the tours page, there are several tours which will guide you around the website and through the different sections with different types of, you'll see the different tours. They each have kind of a different focus. And so that'll give you another sample of what's going on in the Shaolin Chi Mantis site. It's a pretty big site. Little Disneyland of information. All right, so enjoy your Shaolin Chi Mantis. Go to the homepage first and check that out, and then there's links at the bottom to get to other parts of the website. The Tai Chi Beginner Book was written in 1992 by Richard Del Conner. As founder of Shaolin Chi Mantis, traditional Buddhist Kung Fu, Taoist Tai Chi Chuan, and Confucian strategy, he is also the founder of Buddha Kung Fu in 2008. This student manual has benefited hundreds of students and all who always progress farther and faster than students not using the Tai Chi Beginner Book. It's even recommended for people not learning Tai Chi. The Tai Chi Beginner Book by Buddha Jin. Make sure to get the album Tai Chi Magic 1 by Buddha Jin. The song Inner Will was used by his students for many years, actually almost 2 decades, in performances for thousands and thousands of people in state fairs and various events and martial arts tournaments. And these songs were used as backup. And this one particular song, Inner Will, was the song they used to enter the stage and march up with all their weapons and staffs and spears. This song would be playing through the PA, and the students would be banging their sticks with short sticks, they're like their spears and such, with smaller sticks, banging them in rhythm to this music, creating this huge, dynamic, three-dimensional they actually developed a chant. If you listen very carefully to the record, you can hear in one of the versions when Richard was recording the drums on the song, he actually did the chant while he was recording the drums. So you can barely hear it. He was singing it along, so he knew where he was in the song, he said. But you can actually hear the chant that one of the students used to sing. Anyway, that's Inner Will on the Tai Chi Magic album by Buddha Jin. Yes, there's some kung fu music on there too.